We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Berhalter era kicked off on Sunday as the U.S. easily and expectedly beat Panama 3-0. Yes, the win is important, but how this team won is even more important. It's a small sample size, and so the skepticism, cynicism, and criticism of this team remains. But Berhalter's done a pretty good job of publicly articulating what he wants this team to do. At least so far, he's practicing what he preached. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. As you heard, we'll be talking about the dawn of a new U.S. men's national team under Greg Berhalter. We'll have our Mossy Makes the Case segment, and he's going to be talking about Neymar's showboating. Or is it showboating? We'll be answering your questions in our hashtag AskAlexi segment, including some pro-rel questions, drink, and so much more, as always. But first, joining me, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox Soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. How are you this week, Mossy?
I am good. And by the way, I came up with a very clever idea for us to promote this podcast.
Ooh. I'll be the judge of that. Go ahead.
We should rent an island and stage a music festival.
So the dueling fire festival documentaries is what you are referencing. And for those that don't know, the fire festival was a complete and utter disaster of a music festival that was supposed to be this high-end, elite, incredibly expensive, glamping type of experience down in the Caribbean that was anything but. And what I think is, and there's two of them. There's one on Netflix and there's one on Hulu. I have only watched the Netflix one. Have you watched both of them?
Only the Netflix
one. Only the Netflix one. So those, if you're out there and you've watched the Hulu one, you think it's better, let us know. But it is a fascinating look into a complete and utter disaster of organization. The people that organized and put on the documentaries, they're the ones that should have organized the actual festival, because they didn't. The people that did actually organize the festival didn't know what's going on. Who was the there's the one guy? What's his name?
Billy McFarland.
Billy McFarland is one of the main protagonists in this, and actually went to jail because of his involvement. Who was his partner? The rapper?
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule for me is an absolute moron. He comes out looking like a complete and utter moron with regards to, and he was, at least I don't know who he is, but he was positioned as this incredible business mogul type of thing, and the guy was just there to drink beer and hang out with girls, which isn't a bad thing, but when you're the organizer and the founder of a festival, you better get your act together. And they didn't get their act together. Did you enjoy the doc?
I did, yeah. No, listen, I can't stand 50 Cent. I think he's the worst lyricist in hip-hop history, but the one worthwhile thing that guy did was end Ja Rule's career. They got into a major beef about 15 years ago, and some of the songs that 50 Cent made were so brutal that Ja Rule lost any kind of street cred, as they say, and he's hasn't been heard from since, from a music standpoint, and so now he's trying to make himself relevant again through these business ventures, and this one blew up in his face.
Wow. All right, well, anyway, check out those documentaries. We always have our little Netflix debate, and if you did see it on Hulu, tell us if it was better, good, bad, all that kind of stuff. What else? Did you go on any hikes?
I did go on a hike.
All right, congratulations. All right, enough of our talk of our hikes and our Netflix watching. All right, ready to light this candle?
Yep.
All right. As you know, each and every week, we kick off the pod with
Alexi Lalas's State of the Union.
Yes, it's time for my State of the Union, where I look at a part of the game from an American perspective. And this week, it goes a little something like this. The U.S. men's national team doesn't deserve your unwavering support, attention, or respect. That's something that's earned, and it was lost in the team's epic failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. Now it's up to new head coach Greg Berhalter and this new generation of players to earn back that support, attention, and respect. The Berhalter era kicked off on Sunday as the U.S. easily and expectedly beat Panama 3-0. Yes, it was a soft launch of sorts, featuring a mostly domestic-based U.S. roster against a very weak Panama and played in a near-empty stadium. There will be much bigger challenges to come for Berhalter and company. But it was our first chance to see what this team may look like under Berhalter. Now, in my expert opinion, winning is better than losing. You can hashtag that. So yes, the win is important. But how this team won is even more important. I enjoyed watching this team's commitment to building out of the back in possession, the switching from a back three to a back four with and without the ball, the new young faces like Nick Lima and Georgi Mihailovic giving Berhalter something to think about, and even old General Bradley showing up and bossing the midfield like it was 2009. It's a small sample size, and so the skepticism, cynicism, and criticism of this team remains. But Berhalter's done a pretty good job of publicly articulating what he wants this team to do. And at least against Panama, it looked like his players understood what he wants them to do. Agree or disagree, at least so far, he's practicing what he preached. Berhalter and this team still have a long way to go to earn back that support, attention, and respect. But it can only happen one game at a time. At least against Panama, this U.S. team turned some heads. And that's a start. All right, Mossy, the Berhalter era has started. What say you?
Big win in front of dozens of fans.
I knew you were going to do that.
Mark Twain has a famous quote, "Patriotism is supporting your country all the time and your national team when it deserves it." It's actually government when it deserves it. But let me ask you this. Seeing what a difference it is actually having a coach in terms of a sense of direction, a sense of purpose, did you find yourself thinking, man, why couldn't they have sorted that out sooner? Or is that water under the bridge? We've moved on from the prolonged coaching search.
I found myself thinking that when some of these younger players stepped up in these moments, because, and look, they might not have been where they weren't where they were a year ago, but still it's a whole nother year that maybe they could have gotten more minutes. So they would have been that much further along. So yeah, I felt myself saying that, but I also felt myself not saying that caveat that we have had over the last years, yes, but this isn't the head coach. And so therefore, what am I assessing here if a new person's going to come in and do something different? As I said before, the notion that this team automatically deserves anything, I think everybody can agree, is not correct. If anybody deserves your attention and your support, it's the women's national team for what they have done. But life isn't fair, and soccer isn't fair. And having faith is one thing, but blind faith is not something that I think you should have, nor do I want you to have as a national team supporter. Now, look, the American Outlaws, this is their team, and they're going to stick with them through thick and thin. But it doesn't mean that everybody else has to come to the table. And the damage that has been done and that was done in the fall of 2017 is still felt now. There are certainly others, there's certainly other things to talk about when it comes to the crowd. And what you're referencing is this game was played in Phoenix in a stadium that holds, 70,000 people. There were, 7,000 people ultimately in attendance. Not a great look for the national team, but also not a great look for Phoenix, a city that is hoping to get an MLS team. Was the ticket prices too high? Probably. And we can get into a whole ticket pricing thing, and I have a whole rant on that, but maybe we'll do that later. It's easy to tell people, well, just paper the joint or just sell it for $5. Well, you're undervaluing something from a long term, and that's not always the most prudent thing to do. In this situation, were they too high in 2019 for a domestic-based team against a poor Panama team and what the team is? Yeah, probably. But the reality is that they also had, WWE going on a couple miles away. So there's a million different excuses. But I think ultimately what this really shows is that this team right now has a long way to go to win back those hearts and minds of the general public when it comes to how they view the U.S. men's national team.
Now, seeing the way Berhalter set up the team and the formation he played, did you find yourself plugging in some of the guys that we all think will be the key players? Pulisic, McKinney, Adams, Sargent, kind of imagining what the team will look like eventually?
And I also found myself saying, it's a good thing in terms of, yes, they are better quality players, but it's a bad thing in terms of they didn't get the advantage and the value of a month under Greg Berhalter training. And look, there's something they can do. They're playing overseas. But I think this is why Greg Berhalter, and I mentioned that he's been on a press tour over the last couple of months, and I think he's done a really good job. They have managed him very well, and I think he has said a lot of the right things and good things and interesting and new things in the way that he has talked about how they want to play. But he's also talked about how even when the players aren't in camp, he is still their coach and it's his responsibility and he wants to make sure that they are being not inundated, but at least informed on a consistent basis with how he wants them to play. And I think it's really, really important for the players that weren't involved here to understand what we saw in glimpses. It wasn't perfect the other night. And we got another game this weekend that you can see on Fox that we will be televising against Costa Rica on Saturday. So we're going to have a bigger sample size as we go along. But those players fitting in a way that is incorporated into what has now been established as the Berhalter style of play, that in itself is going to be a feat. Because just because you're a good player doesn't mean that you fit and work for the team.
Yeah, the thing that the sky is falling crowd has always struggled to reconcile is that the U.S. does have some very good young talent right now. Some of the players we saw this weekend, some of the guys I just mentioned, Pulisic, McKinney, Adam Sargent, Timothy Weah, Alex Mendez. And so if you have now a coach who wants to play sort of fluid possession, proactive Man City style football, it could make for an interesting cycle. Do you think winning the Gold Cup in style would go a long way towards winning back those fans?
Okay, so first off, when it comes to style, there's a lot of talk about it here because these games don't ultimately matter. If the U.S. had played a what you would consider an unromantic and caveman style against Trinidad and Tobago and found a way to get a point, nobody would have given a crap about how they ultimately played in order to get that point because they would be going to the World Cup. I think style is something that's important right now and is going to be important going forward. And in the Gold Cup, I think that Greg Berhalter, because he has been so outspoken and very, very good at defining as to how he wants to play, that everybody can see it. And as I mentioned in the State of the Union, the players, more importantly, understand, which has not always been in the case in the past, that's important. And so I think it's going to be something where we look at that style, and yes, we expect, even in the worst of times, we still expected the U.S. men's national team to win the Gold Cup, because we are one of the best teams in CONCACAF. And that doesn't change now. But the added part now is winning this summer and not winning with style, because that means that's subjective, but winning in the style that Greg Berhalter has laid out. I think that is going to be important. And that is going to be, at least from my perspective, part of the discussion.
So you do have this Costa Rica game coming up on Fox. Yep. You'll be involved in that broadcast. What are you looking to see out of this game?
I look to see a continuation. You know, I talked about them playing out of the back from the goalkeeper and not just kicking it long. By the way, there's nothing wrong with kicking it long, but they have said that's not something that we want to do. And I like that. And it puts players in risky positions. It puts players that might not have been accustomed to being in those positions, and that's a good thing. And that's what Greg Berhalter wants. So that's what I want to see, a continuation of that. I mentioned the State of the Union, the 4-3 in the back. I thought that was interesting in terms of how they switched. Now, keep in mind, it gets a hell of a lot more difficult when you play a team that's not going to let you have the crazy possession that they had, and at times is better than you. That's going to be interesting to see if that philosophy that Greg Berhalter has completely goes out the window. Yes, you have to adjust, and yes, you have to be flexible. But does it completely go out the window when you're playing against a much better team? And that's going to come further on down the line. All right. Listen, it's off to a good start. We'll talk a little bit more at the end of the podcast here about the Greg Berhalter era. But so far, so good. The win is good, the way in which that win came. But on to the next week. And the next weekend, if you will, against Costa Rica. And we'll see how this national team under Greg Berhalter continues to progress. And we'll see if off the field, San Jose can come up with a better crowd than Phoenix did. Because that was not fun to watch. It probably wasn't fun to play in front of. But as I mentioned before, the debacle that was not qualifying in 2017 continues to be felt. All right, moving on. Hey, it's Alexi. More of the State of the Union podcast is on the way, but first, I wanted to tell you about a service every soccer fan needs to check out, Fox Soccer Match Pass. With Fox Soccer Match Pass, you can stream live and on-demand matches from the Bundesliga, international friendlies, and more, all on your favorite devices. And the best part? It's all ad-free, and you can cancel at any time. So check out foxsoccermatchpass.com and get started with your free 7-day trial today. Now, back to the show.
Mossy makes the case.
All right, it's time for Mossy Makes the Case. What do you got this week, my friend?
My case is that Neymar might need to leave France for his safety and for my sanity.
Oh, wow. Great lead.
I'm being a little facetious there, but PSG are once again sweating out his fitness. You might recall last season he suffered a foot injury in late February that required surgery. He missed the rest of the campaign and barely made it back in time for the World Cup. Well, last week he re-injured the same foot in a French Cup win over Strasbourg. It's unclear how long he'll be out, but it could be an extended period, which would be a disaster for PSG, a club that spent over 200 million euros to acquire him. And the circumstances of this injury have once again reignited this debate about his style of play and showboating in general. In the match against Strasbourg, he got kicked quite a bit, but he also pulled out his bag of tricks, including a lambretta, or as Alex Dowd calls it, a rainbow. If you ask PSG...
The stain when you say that. All right.
If you ask PSG, the referee didn't do a good enough job protecting him, but if you ask Strasbourg, he brought it on himself. Anthony Gonsalves, some bloke who plays for Strasbourg, had this quote after the match. "It's Neymar's style, but don't come and complain when you get kicked. He is a great player. I respect him. He can enjoy himself, but don't come blubbering afterwards." This has long been a debate with Neymar, and I do think it's been amplified the last couple of seasons because every domestic match he plays for PSG, particularly at home, has kind of this exhibition-y feel to it in which he's looking to put on a show, and the opponents can sense that, and it gets under their skin. So I do think that's part of the problem here, and I think it's an issue that's not going away because Neymar is not going to change his style of play. What do you make of it?
Nor should he. This drives me crazy. Okay, so first off, the very thing that makes Neymar one, and for some people, the great player that he is, and one of the great players in the world, certainly, is the very thing now that we're saying is a problem? No. You go and you pay money to watch Neymar because of the creativity, because of, yes, the tricks and the flicks. This unwritten rule, I am a prime example of somebody who should be saying, hey, you don't do that. You don't show up your opponent. That's not right. You don't need to taking the piss, taking the Mickey, all that kind of stuff. I think that's the right usage. You can yell at me if it's not. But no, I want you to do that. That's what you are paid to do. That's what makes you great. That's why people care about you, okay? Does it anger me more when a guy rainbows it over me or puts it through my legs or does some crazy trick than if he or she just were to run by me? I guess, but in no way does that justify me trying to decapitate that person because they didn't live up to some BS idea and notion of how the game should be played. That is completely ridiculous.
Does the game situation matter? The score was 1-0 when Neymar got hurt. Some people argue that when he does that stuff, when it's 3 or 4-0, he's kind of rubbing it in. But if he does it in the natural flow of a competitive game, then it feels different. When you were playing, did that come into play at all?
I can tell you exactly that there were moments when that happened, and I did not play, should come to no surprise to you, I didn't play on a lot of good teams, but when I was playing on some of these teams that were losing lots of games, and sometimes by many goals, I made a point of never caring that somebody would do it. Now, is it easier for someone to do it at that point? Yeah, it's a whole lot easier. And once again, it's all these unwritten rules. I always used to turn to somebody and say, you know what? You don't want that guy showboating and having that time to do whatever? Then maybe we shouldn't be down 5-0, all right? Maybe you shouldn't have sucked so bad, including myself. So I looked at it as, I didn't think that this person was making a mockery. Well, I mean, it is a mockery, but it's in a good way. I looked at it as that's my responsibility to make sure that he or she is not in the position to do that. Now, maybe I'm much more enlightened than others out there because I know that there are plenty of other folks out there and maybe folks that are walking or driving or or biking or whatever, they're saying, no, that's absolutely not, that's not the case. I want Neymar to do that kind of stuff. I love it. Now, first off, Neymar is not the first person to dribble the soccer ball. Neymar is not the first person to have flair, especially, as you should know, when it comes to a Brazilian. And you can look at Pele, and you can look at and look at Maradona. Both Pele and Maradona, who obviously don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, they should probably turn around and go, hey, listen, all right? Try doing what you're doing right now with the protection that you have right now. Try doing it in our day, okay? Because that back then, even if you didn't put it through somebody's legs, they would still try to break your leg. And the rules and the way that the game was interpreted at that point from a referee standpoint, and certainly no VAR and all that kind of stuff, oftentimes they did, and even more so. There were hatchet men out there in the game that cannot exist today. So Neymar, while he may cry that he's not being protected, he is more protected than any human being in the history of the game is protected.
Yeah, it's funny. 2 days before the Neymar incident, this other Brazilian, Lucas Paquetá, who plays for AC Milan, he did a rainbow in a Serie A game against Genoa, and everybody loved it, and it was celebrated. And I do think the France thing is part of it, because there's something that feels more serious about a Genoa, AC Milan, Serie A game. It was 0-0 at the time, versus PSG when they're 20 points clear at France and playing these other French teams. There, like I said, there's something that just feels sort of exhibition-y about it, that sort of, and there's just something about Neymar's body language on the field that's always rubbed defenders the wrong way. They think his style is inherently showboaty and disrespectful. So
it's not disrespectful. You can't call it the beautiful game, and then when somebody does something beautiful, saying, oh, no, you can't do that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I do think he's a little too concerned with drawing fouls. That's an aspect of his game I don't like, because I actually think it hurts his own team. It disrupts the flow of the game sometimes. It makes it very stop-start. And so that is something I would like to see him cut out. Generally speaking, he does leave the leg in there an extra second longer, hoping the defender will kick him. And
what's
he
wrong
does
with that?
Things like that. Well, he sees the value in drawing fouls and getting cards on the opponents, and I get that. But sometimes he does that in situations where then the referee keeps calling those fouls, and like I said, it kind of disrupts the flow of the game. His team's playing well. It's dominating.
And the referee needs to deal with that. That's not Neymar's problem nor his fault.
No, but I'm saying it's just not a good strategic move in some situations for his own team.
That's different. So from a strategy perspective and from an X's and O's perspective, if he is doing these things at the cost of a different play that we would look at as simpler,
right,
that's different.
Right.
Okay. But if it's a means to an end and that end is good, okay, and we all know that when Neymar does it, whether he puts it through your legs or over the top or whether it's just speed or whatever it ends up being, he draws two and three people each and every time. I think that's good. If I'm his teammate, I think that's good, because ultimately, I don't look at do you see Neymar as a player who does stuff that is self-serving in the moment? Because I think if Neymar has the pass, if he has to dish it at some point, he will do that, and not at the right time. I think he's smart enough to know when to dish the ball. You don't think so?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, he's an excellent passer.
I don't think he's selfish, is what I'm saying. I don't think Neymar's selfish in the way that he plays.
I do think I made this comparison to somebody last week. Watching him play in these Ligue 1 games is getting to be like watching Kramer beat up on those little kids in karate. It's man amongst boys. But I will say, this will be my last comment on this, it sounds like he's going to miss both legs against Manchester United in the round of 16 of the Champions League. And that tie already had a different complexion to it because of what United are doing under Solskjaer. And now you take Neymar out of it and possibly Marco Verratti, who's also injured, and throw in the fact that PSG have done nothing this January, we'll talk about the transfer market in a bit, to upgrade their midfield, which is mind-boggling to me. All of a sudden, United look like favorites in that tie, which is amazing what we were saying when the draw came out.
Well, I just think that the referees and FIFA, they talk so much about protecting players, and they have a responsibility to protect players in the moment in the game in terms of their game management. And when I say players, they have as much responsibility to protect a Neymar, the flamboyant, flair, creative, if you want to call it showboaty, fine, as they do, you know, pick your Mbappe, who's much more direct and predictable in the things that he does, and as much as they have to protect Messi. I mean, all great players are going to get kicked. either on purpose or just by the mere fact that they are quicker and faster and more deceptive than others. And big, dumb center backs, especially like myself, ultimately are going to have mistimed challenges. So I think this is ridiculous. You keep doing you, Neymar. I can have problems from different things when it comes to Neymar, but this is not on my list of problems when it comes to Neymar. You keep doing you. You keep getting hit. You can keep crying if you want about getting hit. It's not gonna stop, unfortunately, because you put yourself in a position to get hit. But that ridiculous excuse from I don't know what the defender. He doesn't even deserve. I don't care about his name. I don't even want you to tell me his name because he doesn't deserve to have any type of play here on the State of the Union podcast for that type of response. All right, moving on.
Ask Alexi.
All right, it's time for Ask Alexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi over on the social media platforms out there. And who knows, Mossy might ask your question as he is about to do right now. What do the people want to know?
First up, at JCL Morgan, do you support or oppose any club in the U.S. having the opportunity to become an MLS club through promotion and relegation as sanctioned by the USSF?
Ah, John Morgan, a good-looking gentleman, wonderful beard by his profile picture, if Twitter is to be believed, up there in Maine, I believe. We had a back and forth this past a couple of days, I know. So he is in a long line of people that have accused me of being, you know, establishment apologists and shills for the system and obstacles to growth of soccer. And a lot of this obviously stems from the lack of promotion relegation that exists. And so let's get his question was, you support or oppose any club in the U.S. having the opportunity to become an MLS club through promotion and relegation? So the short answer is I oppose it. I oppose any, and I'm going to capitalize any club in the U.S. having the opportunity to become an MLS club through promotion and relegation. MLS has decided that this is how they want to go about their business. I don't think that you should have a right to be a part of their business in the same way I don't think you should have the right to be a part of any other club out there. And MLS is a club. MLS is a closed club. I recognize that. It is also the one Division I sanctioned league, the only Division I sanctioned league out there, a league, a professional men's soccer league that has been in existence 22 plus years, which is a feat in itself for anybody that knows their history. What a lot of people are concerned about and what John is concerned about. And look, we went back and forth and, you know, he disagrees with me, but I he did it at times in a respectful way, and that's why I wanted to get to his question here. People going back and forth when it comes to promotion relegation. Look, this is not a get into the weeds long type of promotion relegation thing. We can do that at a later date, but I don't think that we're going to come to agreement on anything here when it comes to myself and the way that I view MLS and the way John views it. What I will take issue with when it comes to John is his assertion that I don't support promotion relegation. I love promotion relegation. I've been involved in promotion relegation. I have seen the excitement. I have seen what promotion relegation can do. It's not that I don't like promotion relegation. And, you know, a lot of times I'll talk about building a better mousetrap and the fact that the sanctioning, we have had multiple leagues that have had the same sanctioning. There's nothing that's stopping, I don't know, well, MLS, there's nothing stopping MLS if they feel that that's appropriate for their business, but I don't want it mandated on anybody. There's nothing stopping USL from having promotion relegation, but I don't want to mandate that they do it. I believe that in the soccer culture and in the soccer situation and structure that exists in the United States, that we can have multiple versions, multiple different types of systems, and ultimately the best one is going to win when it comes to the consumer and the customer out there. And if you believe that promotion relegation is this elixir, then have at it. If you have four teams, go find four teams and have promotion relegation. If it's so good and it changes everything when it comes to how the business on and off the field, then just implement it and everyone will flock to it. Now, I'm being a little bit flippant. I'm being a little bit facetious there because I don't believe necessarily that that's what's going to happen. But it doesn't mean that I don't support it. And so when a league, and Peter Wilt a little while ago, he's no longer with them, but he had gone in and they talked about having a league, a smaller league, and a lower level league having promotion and relegation. I will support you 100%. I will champion your effort to have a league or two leagues or three leagues or a group of teams, whatever you want to call it, that has promotion relegation. Have at it. I will support it. I will promote it. I'll do everything that you want me to do. So I just want to be very, very clear. When I say that I don't believe MLS should be mandated to have promotion relegation, doesn't mean that I don't support promotion relegation, John. And John, I know you're up in Maine right now, and I want to thank you for not just the question, but the things that that you do. And you're an administrator. You are someone who has worked in soccer up there and continue to work in soccer up there. I don't question your love for the game. I don't question your sincerity when it comes to what you believe is the right path going forward. We all have different beliefs as to what the right path is going forward. Ultimately, we all love soccer. We all want to see soccer succeed in the country. We have different ideas on how we should go about doing that. And that will continue to be a discussion and will continue to be an argument. But it's a good argument. It's a good debate. I don't have all the answers. I can be convinced and I can be sold otherwise to change the way that I view things. But right now, this is how I see the world. This is how I see soccer. And when it comes to promotion relegation, I believe that promotion relegation is fine. But once again, I don't think that it should be mandated on MLS or anybody out there if they don't believe that it is right for their business. All right, what's the next question?
At Jay Artsner, who is your favorite teammate to play with?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Jay, that's just the initial J. We don't know if that stands for anything, but I'm Mr. or Mrs. Artsner. Okay, so from a national team perspective, people ask me about that all the time. Who are you friends with and all that kind of stuff? I consider all of the players that I played with friends in that, you know, we see each other, we have a shared experience and one that's unique that will never be taken away. But really close, true, personal friends, there's not a lot of them out there. So when I think of the national team, it's not about who I enjoyed playing with the most. It's who in this day and age I would call up and talk about something other than soccer. You know, and you know, there's not a lot of guys out there. A guy that I do I had a wonderful time playing with because of the player that he was, but more importantly because of the person that he was and the person that he is a guy named Mike Burns, who now is in charge over there in New England. And I know there's people out in New England right there. Such is the case when you are in positions of power and leadership that you are going to be viewed in the context of that position. I'm talking about Mike Burns, the person. And so you can have your opinions as to whether he's good and whether it's fans or agents. Believe me, he gets plenty of criticism. And if he's listening, I'm not telling him anything that he doesn't know. But I love the way that he thinks about the world. I love the way that he thinks about life. And by the way, it has nothing to do sometimes with the way he thinks about soccer. Oftentimes, we don't even necessarily talk about soccer, but I think he's a really, really, if I look back, that's someone from a national team perspective. When it comes to a club perspective, that's interesting. I played with so many different characters. There's a guy from the Los Angeles Galaxy days named Matt Reese, who was a goalkeeper. Many people will recognize him. Great goalkeeper. And what a character that guy was. And so when I think back at people that that have influenced me and impacted me, oftentimes it's not even that they were good on the soccer field. In this case, he was good on the soccer field, but it's much more about the times that we had and the different adventures we had, the personalities and the characters. Oftentimes, personalities and characters were very, very different to my own. That's the kind of stuff that you remember. That's the kind of stuff that you take with you. Yeah, the scores and all that kind of stuff, that's part of the story. But I'll be honest with you, as you get further and further away from your playing career, that becomes less and less important. And it's about, remember we had that night out there, remember that experience there, remember that good time or that bad time and stuff like that. And that probably is the case for a lot of things in life where the reason why you were there comes less important to the fact that you were there with the people. What else?
At Barnes 1925, got any opinions on De Jong joining the Barca midfield? Also for at Statman Mossy, are you excited to see him possibly starting next year, man, Artur?
Okay, so go ahead, take the
I have
Artur
a lot of thoughts
part.
On this, and it's a Barcelona question, so people can make fun of my lisp.
Well, it's not that they... I get this question all the time. They say, why do you sometimes use the lisp and sometimes you don't? Do you just...
Can't control it. It's funny. I used to always think Derek Ray was incredibly pretentious for the way he said Barcelona, but maybe he's like me and he can't control it. and the Barcelona comes
out. Maybe
you're
both pretentious and elitist when it comes to the words, the jargons, the nomenclature that you use. All right, a lot of thoughts here.
All right, so last week, Barcelona completed the signing of 21-year-old Ajax midfielder Frankie de Jong for next season. They paid 75 million euros.
Nothing new in terms of the history of Barcelona buying a young Dutch talent, all right? So that should be a surprise to no one.
So first off, he's an excellent player. It does give him two of the best young midfielders in the world, and Frankie de Jong and Artur, this Brazilian who I love, was on the team now. I said on Twitter, they now have the successor to Busquets and de Jong and the successor to Xavi in Artur. So that's good. But it is amazing, this current Barcelona regime, how much they love to throw money around and buy players. They've already created this ridiculous situation with Coutinho and Dembele, the third and fourth most expensive transfers in soccer history, who are battling for one spot. And they're still talking about signing Rabiot, and they need to be careful about not creating a similar logjam in the midfield. And I thought it was kind of interesting because this came down to Barcelona, Man City, and PSG, the two nouveau rich, like everything that's wrong with the sport clubs, and Barcelona, who hold themselves still as a sort of bastion of integrity. And sure, Barca's money comes from sponsorships, while PSG and Man City, it's just some Arab sheik writing a check. But still, in terms of who's blowing up the market by spending crazy money, Barcelona are now just as guilty as those two other clubs. They've gotten in the mud with them. So, and it's funny because Guardiola, he was left very frustrated because he's desperately trying to find a successor for Fernandinho. They lost out on Jorginho in the summer, and then they lose out on De Jong here. And he talked about how, well, we couldn't have done this deal because the wages were ridiculous. He would have been making as much money as De Bruyne and Aguero, and it would have disrupted the harmony in the dressing room. And he said, I guess a club like Barcelona can afford to give him those crazy wages. So it was kind of funny to hear Pep crying poor at Man City and taking a little bit of a shot at his former club. But so that was kind of a fun little element of this whole deal.
So are you saying, I do not want to put words in your mouth, but are you saying that the emperor has no clothes, that you have a peek behind the curtain and it's just some whiz working a bunch of buttons back there when it comes to, because I was led to believe, Mossy, I've been told all along that Barcelona is Mestuin club, whatever. It's more than a club. It's about La Masia and all that kind of stuff. And yet they just go in and buy their talent. By the way, they also signed, what's his name? Boateng, right?
Well, yeah, that's even the bigger indictment. Okay, you're not going to be pumping out Messi's and Xavi's and Iniesta's. But if you're just kind of plugging a hole in the squad, you ought to be able to reach down there at La Masia and grab somebody that can just be like kind of a squad player. And they can't even do that anymore. So we need a backup striker just in case, just so we can rest Luis Suarez once in a while. Let's go get Kevin Prince Boateng. We need like a fourth center back. Let's go get Murillo from Valencia. So that's just how they operate now. And they might as well close La Masia.
Are you disillusioned? I feel like you're disillusioned with what Barcelona was made to be. And now
this is a hipster's nightmare, Alexi.
This is ridiculous. Exactly. They're just another club.
Yeah.
They're just another. I don't know how you
so
say
you've
that.
So you changed the slogan.
Spanish.
It's
exactly.
Not,
it's not just another club. It's just another club. Un otro club, right? All right. Anything else, Mossy?
No, that is it.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens there in Barcelona with their new philosophy of basically just being another club. All right. Moving on. Hello, people. It's Alexi Lalas. You know, we appreciate you listening to the State of the Union podcast, but if you enjoy our show and you want to know more about the sports gambling world, well, you should take a minute to check out another show we do here on Fox Sports, the Coming Up Winners podcast hosted by Jason McIntyre. Coming Up Winners dives deep into analytical trends that could become major influences in sports gambling. Jason McIntyre and company tackle all the biggest games on the board and break down the NFL, NBA, college football, and college basketball. So, subscribe now for weekly episodes every Monday and Thursday afternoon, available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the show.
The Back Three.
All right, time for our Back Three, where we look at some big stories, games, moments. Mossy, what do we got?
All right, first up, the January transfer window is winding down. It closes this week. Now, once upon a time, I predicted this was going to be a crazy January in terms of players moving right now, partly because the cup tied rules had been lifted. I was wrong about that. It actually hasn't been that crazy of a January. Although, and this could be like a new trend in what the January transfer window becomes, a lot of clubs already making moves for next season.
Yeah.
You've got Pulisic to Chelsea, Pavard to Bayern, De Jong to Barcelona, Aaron Ramsey to Juventus. This isn't confirmed yet, but it sounds like Real Madrid are going to sign this Brazilian defender, Éder Militão from Porto, who I love. So it seems like clubs are now using the January transfer window to get a head start on their planning for next season. But it does create this situation we've talked about, and we'll get to Higuain and some of the moves that did happen now. But do you think it's weird to play like a half a season with a club still having already signed for another club?
I was just about to say, I never had that. That I guess it would be privilege is when you're talking about the money involved with some of these things. I never had that privilege of doing that. But I think it would be weird. I think it would mess with your mind. I think that you would try not to do anything different, but human nature says that, you know, are you pulling out of tackles? Are you thinking about all these? It's very strange. It is a very strange concept for someone to already have been sold knowing where he is going. Now, look, there's been plenty of talks over the years behind the scenes, so that an understanding of a pathway out there. But publicly, to already be out the door and not out the door, I think that's a really strange position to put any player in, regardless of how mature or experienced you are.
Now, I said a couple weeks ago, the one thing that was going to happen that was going to be pretty big this January was this striker carousel. Higuain did move to Chelsea. Morata was confirmed today, goes to Atletico Madrid. And AC Milan replaced Higuain with Piatek, this Polish striker from Genoa who's been the sensation in Serie A this season. So let's focus on Higuain. I mean, you've watched him a lot over the years. How do you think he does for Alex Dowd's Chelsea?
Well, I think it's an upgrade, which isn't saying much probably. But I think we talked about this a couple episodes before, is Higuain, who has never, just from purely from an eye test, other than putting the ball in the back of the net, which is why he's there and ultimately why he is valuable, he doesn't instill confidence just by seeing the man walk across the field in the way that a Zlatan or a Cantona does. There is not an air of beautiful arrogance. There's not an air of royalty, if you will. There's much more of an air of how did this guy get in the locker room? and I know that's probably not fair because this is one of the great goal scorers. But all that is to say, I think he's going to score goals. I still think that's what he does. I think he's going to score. Do you think he's going to score goals?
Yeah, I think he'll do well. Which will be good news for Alex Dowd, who's
Alex,
big
he's going
thumbs
crazy
up on
over
this
here.
Acquisition.
He's very,
yes.
Excited. He's very, very excited.
So a few days left in the window. Let's each pick out a deal we'd like to see happen. I'll let you go first. I know you have one that...
Well, no, I mean, look, it's deals that you want to see happen. As it relates to what's going on here in Major League Soccer, which is just around the corner, we're looking at two teams right now with the Los Angeles Galaxy and, more importantly, Atlanta United, defending MLS Cup champion, Atlanta United, with four designated players. They're both going to have to do something. The second thing to drop has not dropped yet for Atlanta, and that is the sale of Miguel Almiron, which has been talked about for so long, but they are holding on to him because they want to get the maximum amount that they possibly can get. They've talked about Newcastle. Now, what has come in is there's also talk about him possibly going to Spurs. Now, we know that Spurs, they don't buy players anymore. Evidently, that's their philosophy. That's what they're doing. I would love to see something like that. Last second, they not only break this recent tradition of not signing anybody, but they do it on a player coming from Major League Soccer. But to get back to the Atlanta part of it, I know the league is structured like this with manufactured parity, and the rules are designed not to let any one team get too far ahead. But it does kind of hurt me that whether it's the Galaxy or, more importantly, Atlanta, that I'm not going to get to see all four of the talent that they have there because simply of the rules and regulations that exist. And I know that's why they exist, to make sure it happens. But I would love to see a 11th hour swoop from Spurs coming in for Almiron.
My deal, I'm sticking with Chelsea here. I'm not saying I want to see this happen, but this is what I'm most interested in the next few days, is this Callum Hudson-Odoi situation. It was reported this week, and he submitted a transfer request. He is the young 18-year-old Englishman for Chelsea who wants to go to Bayern. He did start and score in the FA Cup this weekend against Jonty Whitehead's Sheffield Wednesday. But still, this would be such an interesting move if he goes to Bayern for all the reasons we've discussed on this podcast. It would be another young Englishman leaving the Premier League to go to Germany following the Jadon Sancho.
And he's turned down a new contract.
Correct.
Right? So he's got all the leverage right now.
It obviously affects Pulisic, and it would be less competition for him next season. So that's one I definitely have my eye on that I'm very interested to see
if it happens
or not. According to Keith Costigan, who's more dialed in than Keith, he thinks it's going to happen.
All right, cool. To the Bundesliga.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see if that happens.
You know, I probably should have gone first and then let you go because the Almond on Tottenham would have been a perfect segue for our next back three topic. So I blew that one. I apologize, Alex.
Right.
I know you had
it's
this grand vision
time.
For
it's
this podcast. And
don't worry,
and
buddy.
I just
we,
it
we will bob and weave. We will yes, make yes. it work. Don't worry.
All right. So the second back three topic, we're going to discuss Tottenham's recent slide. So eliminated from both cup competitions, they fell to Alex Dowd's Chelsea in the League Cup semifinals and then fell to Crystal Palace in the FA Cup, which means they are not going to win a trophy again this season because nobody thinks they're going to win the Premier League or right. the Champions League. This was Pochettino's comment on the matter. Again, we're going to have the debate whether a trophy will take the club to the next level. I don't agree with it. It only builds your ego. The most important thing for Tottenham right now is to always be in the top four. What do you make of that?
Dun, dun, dun. It's not lost in translation. It's very, very clear as to what he is saying.
Very here. Arsene Wenger-esque.
Very Arsene Wenger-esque. And it is strategic. It is a message being sent to everybody outside, but also it is a business decision, this message here. And you let the chips will fall where they may here. Because if I'm a Spurs supporter, I'm saying, while I appreciate your honesty and your clarity, that's not what I signed up for. Or maybe that is what they signed up for. And in that lack of ambition, they are going to settle. No team or no supporters of, and this is still an elite team, no supporters of elite teams, teams that are in Champions League, teams that are in the mix for winning the league, is going to ever want to settle. Settling is for others. Settling is for Everton's. Settling is for Crystal Palace's. Settling is for others. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just the reality of where they are, what they are going to spend, the talent that they have, and certainly the history. So this, the way I look at it, is settling for a team that has not positioned itself as a team that wants to settle. If I was a season ticket holder or a potential season ticket holder, it would irritate me, it would irk me. But would it irritate and irk me enough to say, I'm not going to watch this team because it lacks the ambition to do what every elite team is there to do, which is to ultimately win? And we know only one team can win, but you want your team, at the very least, to believe that that's their priority.
It's funny with these cup competitions. Managers kind of want it both ways. When they lose, it's like, who cares? League Cup, FA Cup. But if they win it, then when it comes to the end of the season, we're assessing whether they had a successful season or not. They'd be the first ones to bring up, wait a minute, we won the trophy, won the FA Cup. How is it not a successful season?
And they'll point to their contract and the clauses that kick in the bonuses, and they'll go on that parade and all that kind of stuff.
It was funny. When United beat Tottenham recently, the game where De Gea stood in his head, there was this narrative came out of it that in the long run, this was actually a good thing for Tottenham because it would dissuade United from going after Pochettino, and it would actually increase the chances of them just deciding to keep Solskjaer. So if you follow that line of thinking, then the last few days, I guess, were great for Tottenham too, because everybody's suddenly down on Pochettino again. All these United fans...
Well, is Pochettino a good coach? Do you think he's a good coach?
I do. And by the way, it seems like it's down to those two. I mean, you're not even hearing Zidane's anymore. It seems like either United are going to make a run at Pochettino or they're going to keep Solskjaer. And all the fan polls the last couple days have been overwhelmingly in Solskjaer's favor. So all of a sudden, Tottenham getting knocked out of these competitions has made people question whether Pochettino is all that. Well, and that might actually be to Tottenham's benefit in a weird way.
Isn't being a winner a quality? And why is Pochettino a winner?
Yeah, again, we've talked about this. I think because the lack of signing players and you look at sort of what Tottenham were.
Well, the little engine that could, that's Tottenham. Oh, poor little Tottenham. They don't sign anybody. They don't have anybody. Oh, and their stadium situation has really messed them up.
I mean,
give me a break.
That's by the way, they're in danger, I think, of falling out of the top four. I know they're 7 points clear of United and Arsenal, but boy, the way United are going with Kane and Ali out and still going to miss a bunch of time, and then that would be a disaster. If they don't win a trophy this season, don't finish in the top four, and this whole stadium situation,
We just read it. It doesn't matter about trophies.
It just matters, but
they don't finish
four.
The top four. Okay, got it. They have to finish in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, even if United go a different way, you'd still have the Real Madrid situation. Now, it's amazing That club is so funny to me because now they win a couple of games, they play well, and the wind is now blowing back in Solari's direction again. But that could easily change. They get knocked out by Ajax or something, and everybody will be on his case again. So it's funny. He has these two sort of Solari and Solskjaer situations here where your clubs are unsure whether they're going to keep the guy that's there, and they kind of have one eye on Pochettino, and it's going to be fascinating to see how that all plays out.
This is why I love Major League Soccer, and I'm unabashed. I recognize that that it is la cosa nostra. It's our thing. It's my thing, and I defend it, guilty as charged. Because as a fan of a team, it would kill me. It would be very difficult to say, all I want is to stay up. All I want is a good season is just to finish in the middle. All I want is just finish the top four. Each and every year, when it comes to Major League Soccer, it's anything can happen. We've seen the worst team in the league go to be the best team in the league. I love that about the league. But everything's, I guess, at this point, when it comes to most of the leagues around the world, and to be fair, there is a separation happening in MLS. It's relative to the money that you spend. But Spurs spend money. It's not as if they're, once again, this poor little club that can't do anything. They've just decided that this is the way that they want to go, and they got plenty of talent. And if Pochettino is such a good coach, okay, at some point you got to win something, or even just be there to try to win something. And he's also set himself up for, as you said, you don't finish top four and problems.
I do think...
actually, no problems, because he'll get hired to go to Manchester United. So he's fine no matter what.
If the next few days go by and they don't do anything, I do think they're one of the big losers in the January transfer window. I thought maybe with the Kane and Ali injuries that would spur them, no pun intended, to actually do something. Well, PSG, by the way, who were, I thought, the biggest losers in the summer. If they don't do anything here, they're the biggest losers again in January. How they haven't upgraded their midfield is absolutely mind-boggling to me. But yeah, I would throw Tottenham and Arsenal right up there with big losers, teams that needed to do something in January to improve their squad and didn't. And so, we'll
all right, see. What else?
All right, we'll end on this. Speaking of Arsenal, Thierry Henry.
Ooh, what's he up to?
A rough introduction to management, Alexi.
He's been a coach, huh?
Yes. If you blinked, you missed it. He's gone after 3 months at Monaco. He lasted 20 games, won only 4 of them. Also feuded with players and had a lot of issues with the French media. And so he was let go. And in a bizarre set of circumstances here, Monaco have appointed Leonardo Jardim, who's the guy they sacked to bring in Henri. So lots of questions here. I'll throw a bunch of stuff at you. I was kind of disappointed. You know, I'm a huge Jardim fan, and I think this is kind of a hopeless situation. And I was kind of, once he got sacked by Monaco, I was like, well, maybe he can go to a better club where there's more of a chance to win. And now he's back at Monaco. Would you have gone back if you were him, a club that fired you 3 months earlier? Do you find that
bizarre? You ever been to Monaco?
That's...
So once the 90 minutes is done, you got the rest of the day and you're in Monaco. No, look, I mean, it's not that they're even necessarily they're going back to Jardim. It's that they're going back to Jardim because they know what he is. They know what he can give. But do you think that they're better off with Jardim than they were? I guess my bigger question is, was this the ineptitude and the inability or maybe just the inexperience of Thierry Henry, or is this just a lost cause in general, this team?
Yeah, I think it's really harsh to draw any big conclusions about Henry as a manager here. I mean, he inherited a club in the relegation zone that was in total disarray, that even struggling with a great coach like Jardim, and then
You know what's happening right now. There are so many coaches, there are so many players, there are so many pundits out there that are just loving it, loving the fact. I give him credit for taking a risk, getting out of that proverbial comfort zone that is television, and more importantly, and I've said this before, doing what he wants to do. And because people ask me all the time, would you coach? Would you coach? I don't want to coach. I love what I do. I'm incredibly privileged and fortunate, and I recognize that each and every day to do what I do. I am a junkie for it. I want to be surrounded by people. I meet so many people in our industry that are like Thierry Henry that may be good, okay, but they are still passing through, and therefore I'm not getting the full 100% in that TV capacity, in the punditry capacity, and they're waiting for something better to come along. It's a way station, and you can get away with that for a little bit, but ultimately it will manifest itself in your performance. You're cheating yourself, and you're cheating the viewer. I appreciate and respect the fact that Thierry Henry recognized what he wanted to do. I'm not happy that it didn't work out, but there's a lot of people that say, hey, It's not so easy. It's easy from that,
let's
that
go
studio.
There, because, you know, this was almost my Mossy Makes the Case.
Really?
I'm that interested in this subject. So Gary Neville was a very opinionated pundit who liked to go after coaches. And while people may agree or disagree with what he said, there was always sort of a feeling that he's entitled to his opinion. And then he tried his luck at coaching with Valencia. It was a disaster. And now he's gone back to punditry. And now when he criticizes coaches, it constantly gets thrown in his face. Well, you didn't do so well. Who are you to talk? Look at what you did at Valencia. So Henry, too, dabbled in punditry, had some things to say about Arsene Wenger in particular, other coaches. Now this happens with Monaco. If he goes back to being a pundit, do you think he'll encounter some of the same issues? How self-aware, you as somebody who was a player and then a GM, and then went into television, how self-aware is somebody about their own career, and do they have to be careful about criticizing somebody else? I mean, have you ever had somebody, when you criticized an MLS front office for their moves, somebody throw it in your face?
Sure.
Like, when you were a GM, you didn't do so well.
Yeah, of course. That's complete fair game, and I don't think he's going to be too worried about it. Neville was okay. He turned, everything was fine, and you'll have a moment where, well, now what do you don't know? You don't know what you're talking about, and the comeuppance and all that kind of stuff. You know, what's that saying that if you're dumb, keep your mouth closed and keep people guessing, because and don't open your mouth and remove all doubt,
all
that kind of stuff. It's the same type of thing. Look, I know that there are plenty of coaches out there that when they hear me criticizing and saying this, they're saying, well, you don't understand. You've never been in our shoes, and you've never actually done this. And they're absolutely right. But once again, I love what I do. And it doesn't mean that I'm not right. And it doesn't mean that I don't respect the fact that it's a whole lot harder when you are standing on that sideline than when you are up in the booth telling people what, or on your couch or at the bar stool or anything, telling people what to do. I recognize that, but I also will submit to you that the other side of the job, which is the job that I do, it also looks easy from your couch. It also looks easy from the bar stool. It also looks easy from the bench where you're coaching to do what we do. But you know, it's like anything. You got to work at it, and the appreciation comes from actually being in those shoes.
If Chris Wondolowski becomes an analyst and he's doing some big U.S. game a few years from now, and a striker misses an easy chance, like, would it be weird if Wondolowski starts yelling on TV, "You got to put that away"?
No, it would be great, because it doesn't change the fact that you do have to put that away. You know, and maybe it's a credibility, but Henry in particular, because, you know, the way he holds himself and the once again, I love it, the beautiful arrogance that drips off him in everything that he does. There's plenty of what's the German word, Schadenfreude, going around right now. People are loving the fact that this did not work out for him. But he's going to be just fine. Don't worry about Thierry.
Last thing, there are some people, including your buddy Matt Doyle, already starting the Thierry Henry to MLS. You know, we know Patrick Vieira came here, another Arsenal legend, did well as a coach. If Henry wants to stay in coaching, would you be intrigued to see him come to MLS?
Yeah. I think it would be a very different type of proposition for the reasons that I mentioned before. I think MLS is a much more level playing field by design. It's manufactured. The parity that exists there is much more so. You are left to your own devices. And I've said this millions of times that, you know, nowadays in coaching, it's about the first question any coach manager has is how much money do I have? As opposed to, this is the team. My job is to get each and every one of them to play better than they have been playing. And nobody wants to coach them up anymore. It's all just relative to what I can spend and bring in. Well, in MLS, I think he would be challenged in a unique way, but I also think it would be interesting to see Thierry Henry in a much more level type of playing field, which is why it would be also interesting if Thierry Henry were given, you know, Arsenal. If Thierry Henry walked into Arsenal with the talent that they have, would some of the same problems that he had in this past stint rear their ugly head? That's why I'm saying, is it just Thierry Henry, or is it the fact that it's Thierry Henry coaching a poor team that most people would struggle with? What do you think?
If Thierry Henry took over Arsenal?
Yeah.
Again, I've just, it's such a small sample. I don't know. I don't have a good sense on that.
Well, it's not happening anyway. But MLS, you know, that certainly is, given his background and his history, and it might be something that he might want to do. But it also, you know, it might signify for him in a certain way as such a departure and maybe looked at as a backward step or a regression, that it might not be something that he wants to do. But I tell you what, Patrick Vieira was wonderful when he was over here. And it'd be interesting to see if Thierry Henry gets that gig. All right, anything else, Mossy?
That's it.
All right, that's it for our back three, which means we have come to the end of yet another episode. I feel this has been a longer episode. If it is true, and our good friend Alex over here has edited it in a longer form, you're welcome. You get some bonus State of the Union pod. If not, and he's just edited it to be the same thing, then congratulations, you're done with your run, you're done with your walk, you're done with your biking, whatever it is. All right, at the end of every podcast, we do talk about our one big thing, and obviously as we start this new era under Greg Berhalter, there are going to be a lot of people that are going to look askant and be skeptical, and rightfully so. You have faith, all right, in something. It doesn't necessarily, and not everything, but in this context, in terms of a team, you have faith in a team. It doesn't mean you have blind faith. And just because you don't have blind faith doesn't make you any less of a supporter and a lover of said team. In this case, it's the U.S. Men's National Team. And as I said before, it's up to Greg Berhalter and this team to prove to me, to you, to everybody, that they are worthy of our attention, that this is a team that you can get behind, that this is a team that when you say, I believe that we will win, that you truly mean it. But that belief and that faith comes only with time. And so therefore, you're going to need some patience. You're not going to get forever. And I think as Greg Berhalter goes through this next few months and into the summer, I think the summer is where he's going to be judged the most harshest, if you will. And I think that that is completely fair. But leading up to that summer, including this next weekend when the team comes out for their second game, you're going to have to see some progression. And it doesn't mean that you're not taking a step back in order to go two steps forward. It's not going to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And if Greg Berhalter were here, he would tell you that. And it's not from a job standpoint and what I do. I'm not looking for perfection. I am looking for an articulation of exactly what you want to do, as detailed and specific as you can. I've gotten that from Greg Berhalter. I understand what he wants this team to be. Then I'm looking for that to manifest itself on a continual basis on the field. One game, 90 minutes, small sample size, but so far so good. Now we go on to San Jose, and I think that that's fair to hold him to what he has promised from this team on a continual basis. And I wish him well. I don't ever want my national team, and it is still my national team, to suffer, especially to suffer to the depths of the last couple of years. It's a dark period, as we've talked about, and hopefully we're coming out on the other side, and hopefully with Greg Berhalter leading this team, there are good times ahead. Doesn't mean there won't be bad times, but more good times than bad times. And I wish him and this entire batch of players well going forward in their effort to win all of us back so that we can have that faith and ultimately that belief in this team, in that it is heading in the right direction. All right, Mossy, anything before we go?
Nope.
All right. Thank you again for listening. Hit us up out there with that Ask Alexi hashtag on all the different social media platforms out there, and we'll use some of the questions going forward. I appreciate the questions coming. I appreciate whether you agree or disagree with what we're saying, that you let yourself be heard in whatever way you have, like John Morgan did today in our Ask Alexi segment. More of those. Keep them coming, and we will see you again next week. Till then, size of the day.